So continuing with Tattva Sandarbha. A systematic and comprehensive presentation of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya as revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and in one sense, the foundation of a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, since this is a exposition on Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, the whole range of Vedanta Sutra in six parts. And we're discussing the Pramana Khanda, the Pramana section of Tattva Sandarbha. The objective in this section, when we conclude, he has a big celebration. Well said. That's how he ends. Well said. Srimad Bhagavatam is that best of evidences to help reveal the truths about Krishna. Well said. So to get there, there's steps and then there's little steps in between those steps. So the first step he entered into was of the various categories of pramana, the Vedas are the best. Shabda pramana is best, and amongst Shabda, the Vedas. Aparusheya Shabda, non-human origin, non-human written down Vedas, Shabda Pramana. Then this morning we entered into the next section, which is along with the four Vedas, there's the Puranas and Itihasas, and they are co-Vedic. They're equally Vedic. Because there's lots of people out there that just took in a world religion course. They're not even necessarily scholars. And the world religion courses are taught by people who learn from scholars who say the Puranas and Itihasas are not Vedic. And so, you know, people in the world today assume, wrongly, the scholars are right. So Jiva Goswami is addressing those scholars and thereby, you know, hopefully rewriting some of the textbooks that more people learn about the Vedas, that the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic. And not only they say so, but meaning the Puranas say so, but the four Vedas say so. And then we're going to hear in the course of this evening something that's a kind of a conclusion, like a really powerful verse, the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. Remember that one that says the four Vedas and the Itihasas and Puranas came directly from the Supreme Lord Narayan. And then there's a group of people that say, well, if that's so, if we're to accept that, because Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad, one of the four Veda literatures, says it, and it must mean it's within the four Vedas. There's some history sections and some portions that deal with creation sections, like in the Rig Veda, the Purusha Sukta mantras within the Rig Veda, that deal with creation. So it's within the Vedas. So we heard this, the second session this morning. No, they're separate sections. In fact, they're called this fifth Veda. And so what I'm going to do, first I'm just going to show you. Remember we had this little discussion why was it that Balaram went on pilgrimage and we didn't reach a conclusion? So I did a little homework during our break. And our little device isn't working. That's a problem. Is there some way to get the little device to work? Is there an off-on switch? It's on? It's off. Now what's on? Need the device doctor. Go ahead. Purusheya Shabda. Okay, there we go. So, taken from Canto 10, Chapter 78, Text 17, the translation reads, Lord Balaram then heard that the Kurus were preparing for war with the Pandavas. Being neutral, he departed on the pretext of going to bathe in the holy places. So in that chapter 78, it's just preceding this is, you know, this is for our devotees that like, you know, Puranic stories. When Jai and Vijay were cursed by the Kumaras to take birth on earth three times, the last of the three times during Krishna's pastimes were who? It's a quiz question. Shishupal and Dantavakra. So in chapter 78, Krishna KOs Dantavakra. Dantavakra, you know, comes out bloodthirsty, wanting to kill Krishna. He smashes Krishna in the head with his club. Krishna doesn't even feel like a fly landed on his head. Took his club, smashed his club in the chest of Dantavakra, and his heart broke open. And he fell on the ground. And it's described there, very similar, the same as Shishupal. Shishupal's is more famous or more often spoken about, but his soul left his body, hovered in the air, and merged into the body of Krishna. Dantavakra had a younger brother. And the younger brother, I'm going to take revenge. And very gently, Krishna lifted his finger. Sudarshan Chakra appeared and the upper portion of that younger brother of Dantavakra was separated from the rest of his body. And then Krishna decided to put his weapons away. And they were in Dwarka when this situation happened. And the explanation that's given in Krishna book, Prabhupada explains it a little bit more. He says that Lord Balaram heard that an arrangement was being made for a fight between the two rival parties in the Kuru dynasty, one headed by Duryodhana and the other by the Pandavas. He did not like the idea, and he tried to act as a mediator to stop the fighting. It's one of the services, you know, CDR. Those of you that work in the corporate world, you know what that is. Conflict dispute resolution. He had a master's degree in conflict dispute resolution, but it didn't work. Even Balaram couldn't stop the fight. So he chose to not take part in the fight. So instead he went on pilgrimage. He left Dwarka on the plea of visiting various holy places. So we're going to see this image one more time. It's in the section that we're about to cover, but that's why Balaram was on pilgrimage. So I'm now going to, since you're all nicely. The verses from text 12 and 13. I'm going to read the verses from text 13, just the verses. So if you have your book, you can open your book. And otherwise, text 13. Jiva Goswami begins. Okay. Therefore, we find in the Prabhas Kanda of Skanda Purana, quote, Brahma, the grandfather of the immortal demigods, in ancient times, performed severe penances and so the Vedas became manifest along with their six supplements, their word-for-word glosses, and their resequenced texts. Then the entire Purana, singular, appeared, unchanging and auspicious, embodying all scriptures. There's one answer to your scholar friend. There's another one this evening. Its eternal sound comprising as many as 1 billion verses. It emanated from Lord Brahma's mouth. Listen to the descriptions of its divisions. First, in the Brahma Purana, then etc. So, that's from Skanda Purana. Text 2. 13.2. Here, the figure 1 billion refers to the number of verses current on the planet of Brahma. A similar passage from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam starts, quote, beginning from the front of the face of Brahma, the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, gradually became manifest. In that passage, we find this statement, a couple of verses later. Then, Brahma, who could see everything, past, present, and future, created the fifth Veda, the pranas and the histories from all his mouths. There, the word Veda is used in reference to the pranas and itihasas. 13.3. We find similar statements elsewhere. Quote, the prana is the fifth Veda, unquote. The itihasas and pranas are called the fifth Veda, unquote. And he taught the Vedas along with the Mahabharata the fifth Veda, unquote. So, this is from Mahabharata, the Shanti Parva section. 13.4. The Bhavishya Purana says, the Veda of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas is the fifth Veda known as the Mahabharata. And in the Chandogya Upanishad, the Kotamiya branch of the Samaveda, we find this. Sir, I have studied the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Samaveda, and Atharva Veda, and the Itihasa Purana, the fifth Veda. Chandogya Upanishad. Then here comes, you know, one objection presumes that in the statement about the breath of the Supreme Being, this Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad verse that was quoted in text number 12, the Itihasas and Puranas mentioned are nothing more than certain parts of the four Vedas. That objection, therefore, denies the separate existence of the Itihasas and Puranas. The separate existence of the Itihasas and Puranas, meaning as the fifth Veda. So, fifth Veda means it's not part of the four. That's pretty simple. The evidence given above refutes that objection. The passage beginning first, the Brahma Purana refutes it as well. So,
what he has just done.
In text 13, we just reviewed it, is the Puranas and Itihasas are also Vedic, and they're not subsets of the four Vedas. We heard this Mimamsa doctrine that modern scholarship may not trace to Mimamsa and to Jaimini, but you know, it's older than they are, and that's where it comes from. That is so. Let's say that one again. This is a notion that's addressed by these scriptural references, refuted by these scriptural references. The Vedas are eternal. They manifest from Narayana. They were present in sound vibration. And over a period of time, portions of those original Vedas, which included the four Vedas, which include subsets of which were the Itihasa and Purana, portion of those four Vedas, 94% of those Vedas became lost. Vyasadeva felt sorry for and compassionate, and so he reconstructed something that looked like, but they weren't the original. They're modern creations in different Sanskrit than the original Vedas. And that is, you know, a view that some people hold. So this message that they're the fifth Veda, stated by the four Vedas, refutes that idea. Now, Jiva Goswami, in this next Anuchet number 14, or text 14, he's going to address the question, why do we use this language, fifth Veda? Anyway, what is it? What's behind it, the fifth Veda? And he gives two answers. One is that the Itihasas and Puranas are called the fifth Veda because they were produced from the original Yajurveda. So before the Vedas were divided into four, there was originally one. And when the Vedas were divided into four from the one, there was some remaining verses, 1 billion. And those remaining 1 billion verses became the Itihasa Purana. So I'm going to summarize this before we roll into the text. To support this understanding, Jiva Goswami refers to a verse from Vayu Purana that details, and it's very interesting. I find it very, I've heard always there's one Veda divided into four. You know, so this details the whole process. It's very interesting. And the second reason, and it's also quite interesting, is there's a second reason that the fifth Veda is distinct from the other four because within some of the sacrifices that are described within the four Vedas, how they're to be done, they use the fifth Veda. But it's not part of the yajna. It's not where mantras come from and, you know, the actual execution of the yajna. So it's the fifth Veda. And I'm mentioning it now, and you see there's this, you know, CF, pay special attention to 14.2 when we get there. That's the reference that addresses this one. Oops, excuse me. Sorry. This one. Now, that's Vyasadeva at the bottom, the painting, an image of him. So I'm going to now very briefly summarize. So you're going to hear this three times. I'm going to summarize, And then we're going to, because it's a little involved, and then we're going to go through the PowerPoint that says it second time, and then we're going to read the verses third time. So I'm getting a little feedback. Hearing these points, you know, repeated a little bit from different angles, it helped it sink in a little bit. So that's what we're going to do. Here's a little, before we go into the texts, here's the little summary. Jiva Goswami makes a reference from Vayu Purana. It's a long one that details how Vyasa did what he did. He did his work. The person who's explaining it is Sutta Goswami, as you recall. Sutta Goswami spoke all 18 of the Puranas. He not only was the speaker of Bhagavad Purana, because he heard from Shukadev, but he spoke all the Puranas. You know, but in some of those parts, he has, for example, in Vishnu Purana, he has Parashramuni speaking to different people. Just like in the Bhagavatam, Maitreya speaking to Vidura and like that. Shuta is the speaker. He's explaining in the Vayu Purana that he, the son of Ramaharshan, named Ugrashrava Sutta, says he was, Sutta is a title. Vyasadeva gave me the title. And the title of Sutta means, in the English word is bard, B-A-R-D. You know, like in British culture, a bard is one who sings songs in praise of the king or something like that. And it's in Vedic culture. The suttas wake up the king singing praises of the king and like that. They have a certain brahminical function. It's a function, sutta. So Ugrashrava Sutta is explaining the title sutta was given directly by Vyasa. I was his disciple. I had a father and I learned from my father, but you know, Vyasadeva took this Yajurveda. Vyasadeva took the one Veda and he unscrambled it. We'll see. There's a reference from the 12th canto Bhagavatam. 12th canto Bhagavatam. How he did what he did. A comparison is given in one verse to like a king who has a box of jewels. Different kinds. Diamonds, of course, rubies, emeralds, and sapphires, and then some other ones. And he hands the box to somebody and says, can you separate them into piles? Put the diamonds over here and the rubies, you know, he divided the Vedas into four. Because previous ages, the brahmanas, they didn't have to have somebody sort the box out. They just knew which mantras to pick from the box, from the Vedas. But it's Kali Yuga, so he makes stuff up. He didn't create the Vedas. He just divided it into piles. That's, you know, four piles, four Vedas, each with four divisions. We saw the chart, we'll see it again. And entrusted each one of those four to somebody. And then there was 1 billion verses from that original one, Veda. The original Yajurveda. And from those 1 billion, there are different groups. Gathas, Akhyanas, and there's another group, can't remember right now. And he took those and from them he presented the Puranas from the original Veda. And the Vayu Purana says, they're also Yajurveda. Those Puranas and Itihasas. They're in the same category because they come from the same box. They come from the same, you know, Narayana who gave the box. They're as Vedic as, you know, the four. Because they're from the same source. Then there's this little detail that I find very interesting. Some people say, this is, you know, our friend at the critic. Some people say, well, wait a minute. This text says that Brihadaranyaka Upanishad text says that from Narayana came the four Vedas and these, you know, itihasas and puranas. Now you're speaking about the one Veda. And it's called the Yajurveda. But the Yajurveda is one of the four Vedas. So what's going on here? Now, a commentator that Gopi Pranadanda refers to, who lived after Baladev Vidyabhusan, those of you that have a book, it's the paragraph number 4 from text 14. We're getting, you know, I'm looking ahead at the chapter because then it'll help you understand as we go along. I'll say it and then I'll read it. There's a Sanskrit rule that says if there's a group, you don't have to say the members or the items of the group. You can just say the head of the group. And it follows a certain Sanskrit rule, which an acharya, Radha Mohana Vachaspati, who lived after Baladev Vidyabhusan and wrote a commentary on explaining this, he says that when the Rig and other Vedas are said to have appeared in distinct order from Mahavishnu, in that Brihadaranyaka Upanishad verse, at the beginning of the current cycle of creation, you know, this day of Brahma, what is being referred to as only the periodic re-manifestation. Something like Krishna said to Uddhava in the 10th canto chapter 20, excuse me, 11th canto chapter 20. You know, each day of Brahma there's a partial devastation, the Vedas are lost, he manifests them again, they're eternal. Actually, the four perpetually exist, like the box that has all four. And because the Yajur mantras are the most prominent, the complete corpus can be called Yajur Veda. This accords with the hermeneutics rule. Remember we mentioned that word hermeneutics twice so far here, that is a third time. Rules for understanding messages from the scripture. How do you understand messages from the scripture? It's one of the six darshans. There's a rule. Adikyena vyapadesha bhavanti. What's that mean? A name may be assigned according to the most prominent category of a mixed group. So this nomenclature, the Yajurveda, there was one. According to this acharya, Radha Madhana Vachaspati, or Mohana Vachaspati, to say that the Veda was one, it was actually four, but it's mentioned as one because it was the most prominent of the four. So it says one Veda. Like that, and it fits with his example of the Bhagavatam 12th canto, the box that has different jewels. You could say the box that has different jewels, the box of diamonds. Because there's a lot of diamonds. But there's also some rubies and emeralds and sapphires. But the box of diamonds follows the Sanskrit rule or the hermeneutic rule that says the most prominent member or group can be assigned by that name. Interesting. Now there's another 1 billion verses in that box. And they have some sub-names, Akyanas and Gatas and whatever the other one is. And Vyas took those 1 billion verses and fashioned them together. We'll hear the verses because he said, Vyasadev knew the purport of the Puranas, which had been lost. Why had they, how they've been lost? The curse of Gotama. We're going to hear more once again, actually, the curse of Gotama. That they were lost. So he had to manifest them again. They're eternal, but they were lost. You know, externally not manifest. But then he made them externally manifest. And he wrote them down. It wasn't creative writing 101. He did the work of a rishi, which is, a rishi is one who can, rishi means one who can see. He's a seer. He could see this, the vaidusha pramana, same as we, you know. And he just stated them and he wrote them down. Not what the Mimamsaka folks say. Oh, they were lost, so he just did some creative writing. And they're not part of the original Vedas. So now let's go through the verses again. And then at the end, I'll read the text again. And hopefully it'll be all a little more clear. If it's a little cloudy, partly sunny, but a little cloudy. Okay, so here we go. That was a summary of text 14. And now we're going into 14.1. The picture you see up here, this is Sutta Goswami. There's a fire yagya in front of Sutta Goswami. And there's his audience. He doesn't even have an amplification system, but there are a lot of people there somehow able to hear him. Maybe he had a booming voice or something. And Jiva Goswami begins this section, 14.1, by making reference to a section from Vayu Purana where Sutta, Ugra Shrava Sutta, the son of Roma Harshan, is narrating how Vyas did what he did. And in the course of this, Jiva Goswami says, he's not only showing how he did what he did, but he's affirming the Upurusheya authority of the Puranas. He does that by tracing out how they became manifest. So it's a little technical, but that's okay. This Vayu Purana describes there's Chatur, or four. Chatur means four. Hotra, priests, like Agnihotra, you know, for fire sacrifices. There's four priests required. Some of you, you're from central New Jersey, so you saw the deity installation. And you recall there were four fire yagyas going on. Remember? Yes. And so, you know, that's the Vaishnava version of what's the Vedic principle. And then, you know, it's a different set of mantras, of course. But the same principle. So, here's the detail. And if you don't remember this, you're not going to get an F in your exam. Don't worry. This is detail. There are four Vedas. One of them is the Yajur Veda. And there's a priest that knows the mantras of the Yajur Veda. And what that priest does, Advaryu priest, he sets up the yajna. He's supposed to know all those details. You know, vastu, what's that? You know, directions, you know, so many degrees and which way is north and this flag goes over here and that flag goes over there and, you know, all that stuff. And all the designs of mandalas and things. He knows how to, you know, and sanctify the articles. Get the place ready for the yajna. That's the Advaryu priests that know all the mantras from the Yajur Veda. And then there's the Sama Veda. And the Sama Veda priests are called Udgata priests. And the Sama Veda is known as being the sweetest, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, of the Vedas, I'm Sama Veda. So the Sama Veda is inviting Lord Vishnu to be the Bhokta of the Yajna. Those of you that know Bhagavad Gita, we know from Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, the last verse, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. Right? Krishna says he's the Bhokta of the Yajna. And the Samaveda mantras, they invoke Lord Vishnu, please come and be the Bhokta of the Yajna. They know all the mantras for that. So that's the Udgata priest. And then next is the Rig Veda priests. They're called Hota priests. They're like the MC. And they invite all the demigods, oh, welcome this one and that one. And they know all those mantras that formally invite, welcome the demigods to come and partake in the yajna. And then there's the Atharva Veda of the four Vedas. This is Veda number four. This is called the Brahma priest. And they are kind of like the referee. You know, if somebody makes a boo-boo, they're supposed to, you know, correct them and have them go back and redo it again. And they have mantras for warding off inauspicious things. Jay. Inauspicious things. So these four, here's what the Vayu Purana says. There's all these mantras that are to be recited by these four kinds of priests. And Vyas separated out those mantras and handed them over to those four kinds of priests. And now in the next slide, you'll see at the bottom this reference from the Bhagavatam that I mentioned. You're hearing it for the second time. Srila Vyasadeva separated the mantras of the Rig Atharva Yajur and Samaveda into four divisions, just as one sorts out a mixed collection of jewels into piles. Thus he composed four distinct literatures. Now remember, they were already there. The diamonds didn't become rubies, or the rubies didn't become sapphires. They were just already there. He just separated them out. That's what he did. That's what he did. Veda Vyas. That's what Vyasa means. Divides. Didn't create. He's not the origin of them. He just divided them to make it easy for people in Kali Yuga. So here's what the Vayu Purana says. Again, Ugra Shrava, this Sutta Goswami here, he says in Vayu Purana that Vyasadeva authorized him to act as a Puranic Sutta. He gave him that service and the title. Then he goes on. There was only one undivided Yajur Veda, meaning one box with the four different types of jewels. The four different kinds of mantras comprising the four basic Vedas are originally mixed together indiscriminately. Intelligent Brahmanas before Kali Yuga were competent enough to locate the particular mantras they needed from the unordered collection. They just reached into the box and they pulled out the ones that they needed. They were that knowledgeable about the Vedas. Just like, you know, somebody that's very conversant in Bhagavad Gita. If you're asked a question, you don't have to think about it. Just, you know, recite the verse that's from Bhagavad Gita. Yeah? Like that. Only these were far more qualified than, you know, Bhagavad Gita sloka reciters. These are Vedic Brahmins. That's all they did. Only for the corrupt age of Kali is it necessary to divide the Vedas into four separate books. So every Kali Yuga, in each of the Yuga cycles, prior to Kali Yuga beginning, there's a Vyas. And he does the Veda Vyas. He divides the Vedas. And then this paragraph next says what this says. Basically, this separated into four different piles. Now, continuing in this 14.1, very important, how the Puranas become pulled out of that box. Vyasadeva, quoting Vayu Purana, Vyasadeva, being thoroughly conversant with the purport of the Puranas, then fashioned his summary of them from the Akhyanas, Upakhyanas, and Gathas. What's that? So here's some definitions. At the bottom, well, before we get the definitions of what they are, the important is in the big red letters. whatever remained from the division of the Veda, the one, singular, into four, is considered to belong to the Yajurveda. Those 1 billion verses is part of that original Veda. And then he just assembled them into the Puranas. Such is the definitive word on understanding the revealed scriptures. That's the Vaya Purana section reference. So now, at the bottom here, it gives some definition of what an Akhyana is. They're from the four Veda, or from the original Veda, they're stories that are to be narrated by a sutta, or a bard, or a narrator, for religious instruction. Commonly, they're sung musically, and sometimes they're acted out for clear understanding. And there are fewer elements within them than a Purana. So now, what does that mean? There's, those of you that are familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, there's two places, one in the final chapter of Canto 2, another in the final canto of chapter 12, that says there's 10 topics covered in a Mahapurana. 10 topics. And then in a Purana, there's 5. I'm going to show you the list in a moment. Where there's less than 5, that's an Akhyana. Got it? We'll do it again in just 2 more slides. So that's, of the 1 billion in the box that are left over, some Akhyanas. Then there's some Gathas. What's a Gatha? One definition is, we saw it previously, by the way, in text 12. I know it was a long time ago, but we said it. They're from the Vedas. They're specially composed poems in Arya meter. There are certain meters. It's one of the 6 things. If you're going to study Sanskrit, you have to learn meter. And there's a certain, one of the meters is Arya meter. And these gathas are in that Arya meter. And so there were some of those in the box of 1 billion. And there's upakhyanas. Those are generally described as historical accounts. So now, by his mercy, Sridhar Swami makes his commentary on this point, and he says, here it is. An Akhyana is a narration of something witnessed by the speaker, while an Upakhyana is a narration of something the speaker has not witnessed, but rather has heard about. You know, third party. I heard Juna Jivana say something about one of his little boys. I didn't see his little boy, but I heard from Juna Jivana about one of his little boys. So then I tell somebody. Upakhyana. And gathas are songs about the forefathers and earthly beings. That he's taken from Vishnu Purana. Now, here's a reference that comes from Matsya Purana. We're not there yet, but the reference we'll come to in text 17. In text 17, this word Akhyana is again also mentioned. And there it says that the Puranas have 5 characteristics. Although that's not discussed in text 17, it's referenced, but in text 61. So in other words, Jiva Goswami is comprehensive. So you haven't heard what you're interested in hearing. Stay tuned, because he'll get to it, because it's comprehensive and systematic. So here's the reference from Tattva Sandarbha, text 61. Remember, there's only 62 in the whole Tattva Sandarbha. The 5 defining characteristics of a Purana are, here they are, creation, annihilation, that's 2, History of Dynasties, that's 3. The Reigns of Manus, 4. And the Activities of the Members of the Dynasties, that's 5. That's what a Purana. Now, Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana, and it has 10. And then there's some that have less than 5, and those are Akyanas. But Vyasadeva knew the purport, because he's Vyasadeva, and so he took from those Akyanas and Gathas and Upakyanas and assembled the Puranas. That's the work that he did. Now, what's important out of all this, it's already been stated. What's that? The Puranas and Itihasas are from the same box as the 4. They're as Vedic as the 4. He's addressing the question, why are we calling them the 5th Veda? Because they're not the 4 Vedas. There's just a 5th Veda. That's why. They're from the same source. But a different category than those 4. But they're Vedic. It's as Vedic. Now, in 14.2, if you remember, I wanted you to pay attention to 14.2, that's going to say something about how the Itihasas and Puranas are used alongside with the 4 Vedas, just the mantras for the yajnas don't come from those. But those that do the mantras, they learn how to do what they do from the Itihasas and Puranas. They're studied by the Brahmanas that do the yajnas, although they're not used in the yajna, and therefore they deserve the category of 5th Veda. Got it? Here's the text. And this is from the Taittiriya Upanishad, by the way, one of the 4 Vedas. In the Brahma Yajna, there's a little footnote in there. Brahma Yajna is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita purport. You can take note if you like. I'll supply these PowerPoints so you can go back and, you know, study it again, you know, when I'm all done. But as I'm going along, I'm adding and refining, and so I'm not going to give it up now because it won't be the same thing. But when we're done, I'll make it available for all of you that have very patiently been sitting through all this. So in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 12, purport, Prabhupada mentions Brahma Yajna. And it's also mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to, I believe it's Sanatan Goswami, chapter 22. It's mentioned, Brahma Yajna. And it's part of 5 yajnas. It doesn't detail them so much, but bless his heart, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu does. And I'm going to read that nice paragraph. It's detail. You don't get an F in your exam if you don't memorize all this, but this isn't high school. This is just to give you an idea of what the terms are. So if you have a book, it's the last paragraph of text 14 commentary. In 14.2, mention is made of the sacrifice called Brahma Yajna. This is one of Pancha Mahayagya, 5 great sacrifices enjoined for every Vedic householder Brahmana as a daily atonement for the unavoidable violence he commits in the, quote, 5 places of slaughter, unquote, in the house. I remember I heard Prabhupada say, if we had to follow all the rules of Vedic life, we wouldn't get out the door. We'd be spending our whole day doing yajnas. You know, brush your teeth, you got to do a yajna. Because you're, you know, destroying microorganisms in your mouth. You got to do a yajna. So here's the 5. 5 places of slaughter in the house. The broom, the water pot, the spice mortar, the kitchen stove, and the stone on which rice is ground. Those are the 5. You got to do a yajna every day for those 5. Panchamahayagya. And one of them is Brahma Yagya. A householder must honor the demigods by Deva Yagya, daily fire sacrifices. Number two, the revered forefathers by Pritri Yagya, offering Pinda. Three, human beings by Ati Yagya, Atiti Yagya, or hospitality to guests. All living beings by Bhuta Yagya, the symbolic offering of a portion of food from one's plate at every meal. And then finally, the Vedic sages by Brahma Yagya, recitation from various scriptures at the time of chanting the Gayatri Mantra. So not only you chant Gayatri Mantra three times, but you have to chant some Brahma Yagya mantras along with your Gayatri Mantra three times a day. I mean, that's nice. That's Vedic culture. But it takes time. You got, you know, who's, we're too busy. We got to get out and earn money. Get those fruitive activities going. So the Brahminical people are pretty hard to find. The details of the Brahma Yagya are specified in various shrutis, such as one of them that it's being referred to right here, the Taittiriya. So Jiva Goswami makes life easy for us. He just refers to the Brahma Yagya from the Taittiriya Aranyaka, and I'll show you in the chart in just a moment where that is in that, you know, the Vedic chart, Taittiriya Aranyaka. And in that Taittiriya Aranyaka, it says, those who do this, that which Brahmana householders must do every day, one of them, the five, is the Brahma Yagya, and along with the Brahma Yagya, they have to make reference to the Itihasas and Puranas, Taittiriya Aranyaka says. And then Jiva Goswami reasons, unless the Itihasas and Puranas were Vedic, this could not be so. Conversely, they must be Vedic, because if you're going to do Vedic yagyas and you must refer to them, they must be Vedic. Very logical. You don't have to go and see, you know, something mundane. What's on the television broadcast for this evening? If you're going to go do a Vedic yagya, you don't bother with that. They're not of the same quality, or something. What's the train schedule for going to New York City? It's Black Friday. You want to go to the mall. What are the hours that the mall is open? You don't need that information in order to do a Vedic Yagya. But if there's something you need for a Vedic Yagya, it's Vedic. And that's why it's called the Fifth Veda. It's one of the two main arguments of this text 14. So now I'm showing you a nice picture here of a bird. And that bird is a partridge, or the Sanskrit word for a partridge is titara. And we're going to hear some more about the titaras that ate up the Yajurveda from Yajnavalkya. Stay tuned. It's coming up very short, very soon. Coming attractions. But that's the Taittiriya Aranyaka. You'll see just a moment. Then Jiva Goswami makes reference to the Matsya Purana. And in the Matsya Purana, he's stating that Vyas does this once every cycle of four yugas. This thing that the Vayu Purana just said he does, he does it, you know, 1,000 times in every day of Brahma. There's a different Vyas that takes that post. Matsya Purana says that. O best of the Brahmanas, foreseeing that in the course of time the Puranas will be neglected, I appear as Vyasa in each age to condense them. You know, the 1 billion, bringing them to the earthly realm in 400,000. Okay? there's still 1 billion in the realm of Lord Brahma. So Jiva concludes, according to what we have seen here, you know, that the Vedas come from the mouths of Brahma, the Puranas, Itihasas come from the mouths of Brahma, etc. All of this, there's 1 billion of them. So Vyas is saying, the Supreme Lord in Matsya Purana is saying, I edit the already existing Puranas to make it easier to grasp. That's Jiva Goswami's purport to that message. And in his commentary, Baladev Vidyabhusan very kindly points to a similar passage from Vishnu Purana that supports what 14.2 already said. And that is that in, as stated, and each time Kali Yuga cycles around, before it comes, there is a Vyas that does the same thing. And here's that reference from Vishnu Purana. During this period of Vaivasvatamanu's reign, already 28 different exalted sages have edited the Vedas in one Dwarapa age after another. 28 Vedavyasas have already come and gone. O best of souls, dividing the Vedas into four parts in each Dwarapa Yuga. The speaker of Vishnu Purana, Parashramuni. We're going to hear something more from Parashramuni. He says, actually, I was one of those. In cycle number 26, I was Vedavyas. So he knows the subject matter quite well. He was one of them. Now, I'm going slowly, but as a result, I'm not covering much ground. There's a lot, but I want to make sure it's intelligible. Okay, so after Vyas compiled the four Vedas, there still remained 1 billion verses from the original Yajurveda. These verses became the original singular Purana, which is available still today on the heavenly planets. And I'm now going to read aloud the translation from Gopi's translation on 14.3. It's not so long. Text 13, text 14. Okay. Just after that statement, the Matsya Purana statement that we just saw, comes this statement. In every Dwarapa Yuga, I divide the Purana into 18 books, 18 Puranas, totaling 400,000 verses, and that is how they are spread on earth. 400,000. Heavenly planets, 1 billion. Earthly planets, 400,000. But even today on the planets of the demigods, the Purana, singular number one Purana, contains 1 billion verses. The 400,000 verse edition concisely embodies the purport of the original Purana. So that would be, you know, what kind of scholarship do you have to take 1 billion, not 1 million, but 1 billion, reduce it to 400,000, you didn't lose anything. I mean, details you lose, but essences you don't lose? That's an editor. Whew. Now, in 14.4, Jiva Goswami points to back to the big text, the Vayupurana text, where the words in Sanskrit, yach chishtum tu yajurveda, which means the remaining part was also called yajurveda, signifies that the Itihas and Puranas are apurusheya. They're not composed by a mortal. So now, the rest of the text is repeating. He makes these things into 18 Puranas and there's 400,000 verses, etc. So what's the message, conclusion of this little section? They are called the fifth Veda becomes from their same source as the four. They're part of the Yajurveda. That's what he wanted to show, because some people say no. And he's saying yes. And here's the evidence. Then, last little part, the Itihasas and the Puranas are Purusheya, not composed by any mortal. That's the same little section. While Vyasadeva, we say he's the author, because literally he lived during the same period as the Mahabharata. He was a contemporary with the events of Mahabharata. But we must remember the Mahabharata is eternal, which is quite interesting. You know, remember you asking me this question about if somebody knows about events before they happen, doesn't that predetermine the events? Well, you know, the histories are eternal. And they may vary in detail little. But even Krishna's pastimes, they're eternal. And there's variegation within those pastimes. Free will is still operative. Anyway, Vyasadeva is Trikalagya. He can see into the future. He can see into the past equally well as in the present. So he would just, you know, from the breathing of Narayana, which manifests the Puranas and Itihasas and the four Vedas, he tuned into the Mahabharata channel. You know what I mean? Like right now, we're sitting in the temple room and somebody turns on their cell phone. They have then a receiver. They can receive a cell phone signal. Or turn on a radio. They can get a radio signal. Turn on a television. Get a television signal. There's a whole bunch of signals going on right here in the temple room. We just have to have the right receiver. And how are those being transmitted? Through sound. I mean, through ether. So Vyasa had that kind of receiver. You know, the Veda receiver. And he just tuned into the Veda channel. And he received. And he manifested the Mahabharata. So, in one sense, we say he wrote the Mahabharata. But in another sense, more accurately, he just manifested. He did that what rishis do. Like it's, you know, the painting I selected was this one. It shows, you know, light coming from his eyes. He's a rishi. He's a seer. He could see the truth. He just manifested it. Then, it's a detail that's mentioned by Baladev. There are parts in Bhagavad Gita where, you know, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Well, you know, so it's not like Krishna said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, da 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 da. He just added that to help the reader understand, you know, what's going on here. He didn't change the meaning. There's some, you know, original work there. But it's just to help the reader, that's all. Okay, now what I was going to do, but I don't think I have the time for it. I was going to read through all the verses, just the translation of the verses in text 14. So you'd hear it the third time, and you'll see we've covered our subject. Should I do that?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Here we go. Translation of texts 14, starting with 14.1. In the Vayu Purana, Sutta Goswami describes the following words why the Itihasas and Puranas are considered the fifth Veda. Quote, this is the translation of that section from Vayu Purana. The personality of Godhead, Srila Vyasadeva, then chose me, that's Ugrashrava Sutta, as the as an authorized speaker of the Itihasas and Puranas. At first, there was only one Veda, the Ajurveda. Vyasadeva divided it into four. Within these were manifested the ritual acts of the four kinds of priests. And Vyasadeva arranged for the performance of sacrifice accordingly. With the Yajur mantras, he arranged the acts of the Advaryu priests, with the Rig mantras, those of the Hota priests, with the Sama mantras, the Udgata priests, and with the Advarya mantras, the Brahma. Goes on, Vayu Purana, quote, skips a couple of verses. Vyasadeva, being thoroughly conversant with the purport of the Puranas, fashioned his summary of them from the Akyanas, Upakyanas, and Gatas, O best of the Brahmanas. Whatever remained from the division of the Veda, Yajur, Veda, into four, whatever remained is considered to belong to the Yajur Veda. Such is the definitive word of understanding, on understanding the revealed scripture. That was 14.1. 14.2. We see also that in the recitation of Brahma Yajna, the Itihasas and Puranas are employed as thus enjoined. Quote, the Brahmanas, that's the Vedic section. Remember, under the Vedas on the left-hand side, there's the Brahmanas and Samhitas and Akyanas and the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. So the Brahmanas, in Vedic Yajnas, the Brahmanas are consulted. Itihasins and Puranas, they serve as texts prescribing the details of the rituals. Jiva says, unless the Itihasas and Puranas were Vedic, this could not be so. Still 4.2. The Supreme Lord says in the Matsya Purana, quote, O best of the Brahmanas, foreseeing that in the course of time the Puranas will be neglected, I appear as Vyasa in each age to condense them from 1 billion to 400,000. According to what we see here, we have seen here, what the Lord means to say is, quote, I edit the already existing Purana to make it easier to grasp. And two more, 14.3. Just after that statement in Matsya Purana comes another Matsya Purana statement. What's that? In every Dwarapa Yuga, I divide the Purana into 18 books, totaling 400,000 verses. And that is how they are spread on earth. But even today on the planets of the demigods, the Puranas contain 1 billion verses. The 400,000 edition concisely embodies the purport of that original Purana. Now, if you happen to have a book with you, just look at the last line of the Sanskrit, and you'll see this Sankshepena, Sankshepena. That's going to appear in the verses of text 15. Sankshepena means condensed. So Vyasa does two things. He divides into four, and he condenses from 1 billion to 400,000. Two things. He divides and he condenses. And this word that's in the verse, Sankshepena, is the Sanskrit word indicating he condenses. 14.4. Since it has been stated, quote, whatever was left over is considered Yajurveda, that's this Vayu Purana reference of how Vyas did what he did. Whatever was left over is considered Yajurveda. These 400,000 verses were not, as the Mimamsa folks say, They were not new compositions, but the most useful portions of the original 1 billion gathered into an essential condensed version for the world of mortals. Pretty convincing. Okay, so now we're going to move on and finish this section, Krishna permitting. So there's these two terms. Look at that. Vyasta and sunk ship. Vyasta is the dividing and sunk ship is condensing. So what Jiva Goswami does is he makes yet another reference. This one is the Shiva Purana, where from the Via Samhita portion of the Shiva Purana, it says the same thing. Just another reference to reinforce this discussion. And there it says that, there's the Shiva Purana book cover. The ingenious Lord, that's Vyas, abridged the Veda and then divided it, Vyasta, into four. Therefore, he became known as Vedavyas. He also sankshiptam, or summarized, the Puranas in 400,000 verses. But in the heavenly planets, they still comprise 1 billion verses. So here's another reference saying the same thing. Here, the word, Jiva's comment, here the word sankshiptam, or condensed, implies condensed by him. Now in red letters, I already did what I pointed out right here. 14.3, that same word is used as in 15.1. Sunk ship. That's what Vyas does. It's one of the two things he does. And the commentary, Gopi Pranada's commentary remarks, the Mahabharata in the heavenly planets is 60 million. Here is 100,000. So he did some condensing there too. Okay, so now moving along to 15.2. Jiva Goswami is dealing with another, you know, doubt or critic or concern. What about these names of these Puranas? You know, the Agni Purana and Skanda Purana. These are all temporary people with temporary names and temporary positions. So he addresses that. Here's what he says. These Puranic names refer to its original speaker, not, you know, somebody wrote it. Just like within the four Vedas, there are terms, and I'm going to give you three examples, but he just gives one, that Katha Upanishad. Some of you have read Prabhupada's books enough to know that Prabhupada regularly refers to Katha Upanishad. There's certain verses from Katha Upanishad that are very clearly supportive of Vaishnava understanding. So now, how did the Katha Upanishad get its name? Jiva Goswami explains. I just took a picture from the internet. There's, we're going to call this fellow Katamuni. there he is, Katamuni. And in the Katha Upanishad, it's a nice discussion between Yamaraj and Nachiketa. And Katamuni is a post, just like Lord Brahma is a post, and every, you know, every creation there's a Lord Brahma, and then every day of Brahma there's different demigods, and every Manu there's a whole new set of persons that occupy the post of Indra and the demigods. So Katamuni similarly is a post, somebody occupies the post, and he does the thing of learning and teaching to his disciples the Katha Upanishad. It's an eternal Vedic message, that it bears his name because he teaches it. He didn't create it. And here's another one. We're going to do four of them, actually. There's a one of the Brahmanas. Remember that from the side? The Upanishads and the Samhitas and the Aranyakas and the Brahmanas. So one of the Brahmanas has this name, Aitareya Brahmana, because the sage Aitareya presented it. He didn't do some creative writing. It's an eternal Veda, but it bears his name because there's a post and he teaches it. Once somebody, when every of the cycle of four yugas. So, similarly, as with these examples from the Upanishads, and we're going to see some more, when the Puranas bear the name Skanda Purana, Vayu Purana, Agni Purana, etc., it's not like they wrote it or something like that. There's other reasons why their names are there, and he goes into it. With this, 15.2, he now concludes. Job done. What's that? We have proven to those skeptic people out there that say the Itihasas and Puranas are not Vedic. They're Vedic. Now, I added some things that are not exactly... Well, this one is in Sarva Sambhadani. So here we go. Some of you have heard of... Prabhupada refers to the Taittiriya Upanishad. There's also Taittiriya Samhita. There's also Taittiriya Aranyaka. And they're part of the Yajurveda, one of the four. These are part of the four Vedas. They're actually eternal. And they can be manifest or not manifest. So here we're going to hear a little description that's found in Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, Chapter 6. If you look very carefully in 1st Canto, those of you that have studied 1st Canto, you know from Chapter 4 of 1st Canto, there's a description of Vyas dividing the Vedas into four and entrusting the four into different disciples. And it's repeated again in Canto 12, Chapter 6. But he adds to it. So, when the Yajurveda of the four, the Yajurveda mantras, they were given to this fellow who I took off the internet. We're going to call him... Vaishampayana. Hi, Vaishampayana. Nice to meet you. Very handsome gentleman. So, Vaishampayana was given the Yajurveda. But Vaishampayana apparently had some problem. He killed a Brahmana. So his followers, they're called Charakas. This is stated in the Bhagavatam, because they did some strict vows to relieve their guru from the sin of killing a Brahmana. So though he was given the Yajurveda, he killed the Brahmana? Not good. But there's Vedic processes for counteracting sin. And so his disciples assisted him with that. And then, so he, Vaishampayana, was engaging his followers in, you know, ordering all these mantras. And, they were working hard, but they really didn't get the job done so well. So one of Vaishampayana's disciples, was another famous name in Vedic literature. His name is Yajnavalkya. Yajnavalkya had some pride. And with that pride, he went to his spiritual master and said, well, here's what he said from the Bhagavatam. Oh, master, how much benefit will be derived from the feeble endeavors of these weak disciples of yours. I will personally perform some outstanding penance and get the job done real fast. Just give me the green light. Vaishampayana was disgusted. He said, this pride doesn't belong in the heart of a brahmana. Get out. Leave the ashram. And before you leave, leave behind all the Vedas that I gave you. So he did, in the form of vomit. Technology of how you give up Vedas by vomiting isn't described, but that's how he gave them up. And then these other followers, disciples of Vaishampayana, they were hungry for knowledge. But human beings don't eat vomit generally, especially brahmanas. But these guys do. Partridges. So they assumed the form of partridges and ate up all the vomit. And then they were filled, like this guy looks like a really big belly, filled with Yajurveda mantras. And when they then tuned their form back again as regular brahmanas, they manifested them as the Taittiriya Samhita, because they were Taittiras. That's how they received the mantras. Interesting. From the Bhagavatam. There's another. So that's how the Taittiriya, according to the Bhagavatam message you see here, the Taittiriya Samhita, and then there's also the Taittiriya Upanishad. That's how they manifest. Now, they're eternal. This is part of the Yajurveda, but they're called Taittiriya Upanishad, Taittiriya Samhita, because of this event. Got it? The name Taittiriya doesn't, you know, put them in a framework of time. It's something that did happen. That's how they got the name that way. So now let's take a look at our nice chart again. Here's the four Vedas in this box. And then as you look down, there's the Samhitas. So we heard about Taittiriya Samhita. And here's the Brahmana box. And here's the Aranyaka box. And here's the Upanishad box. So we're going to hear some more about Aranyakas in just a moment. But, you know, the Vedas got populated in ways that we just have heard. And now we're going to hear yet another one. This Yajnavalkya, he came off, they got his name on the internet, Yajnavalkya. I don't know if that's really what he looked like, but that's their picture for him. So Yajnavalkya was really hurt. He felt that he was dealt with unfairly. So what did he do? He went to Surya Narayan, because in the heavenly planets, not only all the Puranas that are not here are there, but other Yajur Veda mantras that are there that aren't here, he offered some, you know, really long and beautiful prayers again and again and again. He worshipped Surya Narayan. Now specifically, the Bhagavatam says he did not worship the sun god independently. He worshipped Surya Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose powerful representation or expansion is the sun god. He worshipped Surya Narayan, and he had this desire to get more, kind of like Dhruva, more of the Yajurveda than even Yajnavalkya. Then Vaishampayana. So Surya Narayan, very merciful, it says, satisfied by such glorification, the powerful sun god assumed the form of a horse or a child. And one of the names of a horse is a vaja. And he presented to the sage Yajnavalkya the Yajur mantras previously unknown in human society. So it worked. Yajnavalkya, the disciple, got more Vedic knowledge than his spiritual master had because the Supreme Lord gave it to him. Now this is 12.6.73, and now we're going to see 12.6.74, how something that's eternal becomes manifest on this plane. The Vajasaneyi Samhita of the Yajurveda. So the Yajurveda is one of the four, and one of the Samhitas, given the name Vajasaneyi Samhita, was manifest for Yajnavalkya. Here's what the Bhagavatam says. From these countless hundreds of mantras of the Yajurveda, the powerful sage compiled 15 new branches of Vedic literature. I outdid my spiritual master. Not a good motive. But anyway, these became known as the Vajasaneyi Samhita because they were produced from the hairs of the mane, or sanya, of a horse. Vajasaneyi Samhita. The hairs of the mane of the Supreme the Lord, the Surya Narayan, he assumed the form of a horse, and from the hairs on the back of his neck, the Vedas came, the Ajurveda mantras. And then he put them all together and compiled the Vajasaneyi Samhita of the Ajurveda. These are examples of even the Vedic literatures that have names that appear as events within time, but they're just manifesting the eternal Vedas. And similarly, Jiva Goswami is presenting to us. Similarly, so here's our Puranic, or here's our Vedic chart. These are eternal, and these are eternal. The Sanskrit is different, the source is the same. Opurusheya source. They're the fifth Veda. Here's our friend again. The unspoken. So he doesn't write these, you know, critical remarks. Jiva Goswami is addressing them anyway. He's very accountable, and he wants his audience, these Purva Paksha guys, to hear their doubts addressed. It isn't belabored if they don't accept that he moves on, but he gives a proper response. So, whoa, they get really worked up over this one. If we are to accept the Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic, how is it that they are spoken by a non-Brahmana? Let's do that one again. Only Brahmanas are to approach the four Vedas. So if you say the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic, how come they're spoken by a non-Brahmana? Now he's already concluded the Itihasas. He's already done 15.2. He's done. But you know, these fellows aren't done yet. Wait a minute. They're spoken by a non-Brahmana. How can they be Vedic? And so he goes on, Jiva Goswami goes on with the next 15.3, saying that as the chanting of the holy name, this is the essence, as the chanting of the holy name can be done by anybody, regardless of birth, so similarly the qualification, the adhikar for being a sutta or speaking or hearing the Puranas and Itihasas isn't dependent upon birth. He doesn't deny or challenge the four Vedas should be heard by those of certain qualification. But others that don't have that qualification can chant the holy name. And it's really wonderful how he does this. Even so, persons like Sutta Goswami have the privilege to speak the Itihasas and Puranas just as such persons have the qualification to chant the name, Sri Krishna, which is the perfect fruit of the creeper of the entire Vedic Shruti. You understand his response? There's all the Vedas, and you can't study the Vedas unless you're Brahmana, but the fruit of all those Vedas is the holy name, and anyone can chant the holy name, the fruit of all the Vedas. So the Vedas are to get you to the fruit. What's the purpose of the tree? And non-Brahmanas can chant the holy name. And non-Brahmanas can hear and recite the Vedas. And he quotes a beautiful verse from Prabhas Kanda Skanda Purana. The name Krishna is sweeter, is the sweetest of the sweet, the most auspicious of all auspicious things, like Kevalastakam. It is the perfect fruit of the creeper of the entire Vedic Shruti. In essence, it is pure, living spirit, O best of the Bhrigus. Any human being who just chants the holy name even once, whether with faith or neglectfully, will become liberated. So this mature fruit of the entire Vedic Shruti is the holy name, and non-Brahmanas can chant it. And the Puranas, which give the essence and foundation, we're going to hear about the foundation part in just a moment, they can also receive the benefit. So here's our last verse for this section. Here's our friend again. He has this doubt. Wait a minute. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.25, Suta Goswami says, Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam Trayi Na Shruti Gochara. What's that, the translation? Women, laborers, unqualified descendants of the twice born have no access to the Vedas, at least the Shruti portion of the Vedas. Therefore, the sage Vyasa mercifully compiled Mahabharata. So here's the doubter guy. Since the Mahabharata, the foremost of the Itihasas, was written especially for women and others with no access to the Vedas, how can the Itihasas be part of the Vedas? Well, they just like went to sleep when the other sections were described, because this, the fifth Veda, is part of the Vedas in another category, in those four that cannot be accessed by women, etc., laborers, and so forth. They can't approach those, that's correct. But they can approach this one. They're very merciful. They're very accessible. And make a foundation. We're going to hear that this last verse. So, well, and not only that, but in the eight previous verses of the same chapter, 1.4.13, Shonaka Rishi says to Suta, we consider you expert in all subjects except the Chandasa portion of the Vedas. Now, I added the Chandasa portion of the Vedas. The way Prabhupada translated is you're expert in everything except the Vedas. But the Sanskrit says the Chandasat, as you see right here. Chandasat. So what's the Chandasa portion of the Vedas? It's like the Gayatri Mantra and other Vedic hymns or special mantras like that. Suta was expert in other portions of the Vedas except those, because those are especially, they were his specialty. His specialty was the Itihasas and Puranas, but he wasn't specialized in those. So the doubter says, so if Suta Goswami was not expert in the Vedas, yet was being requested to narrate the Puranas, specifically Bhagavad Purana, how can the Puranas be part of the Vedas? Well, it's a different section of the Vedas. That's how. The fifth Veda. That's how. So now, this is the final, his response. In the Vishnu Dharma Purana, it is stated, a person who chants the two syllables, ha, ri, hari, is considered to have completed study of the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas. Go ahead, just say it. Hari. You've done it. Congratulations. Because that's the fruit. You know, the tree is for the fruit. And similarly, when you study the Itihasas and Puranas, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, that's the Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam. Of the Vedic tree, of desire-fulfilling tree, that's the fruit, the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree of knowledge. Furthermore, the Puranas and Itihasas definitively explain the meaning of the Vedas. Krishna Smarana, this is your question being addressed in part. As the Vishnu Purana confirms in such verses, quote, on the pretext of writing the Mahabharata, Srila Vyasa has explained the Vedas' meaning. Without doubt, all the ideas of the Vedas are given firm foundation in the Puranas. And in his commentary, and we're done, Baladev Vidyabhusan, his comment is, this statement, the Vedas are given a firm foundation, means that the Puranas help fortify the position of the Vedas by explaining parts of them that are difficult to understand and replacing other parts that are missing. See, he's comprehensive. Okay, so we just finished. And when we begin tomorrow, we'll just read again text 14, so it'll be a refresher.
And it's already 9:15, so. Any comments or questions?
Do we have the portable mic? Look at that, here he comes with the portable mic. You get special reward for being, you know, for all the technology you're handling for this event. Thank you.
Guru Maharaj, thank you. It was brilliant. Thank you.
Jiva Goswami, I'm just like hanging on to his dhoti.
I have heard from devotees that one difference between Shruti and Smriti is that the words of the Shruti are unchanging, whereas the words of the Smriti can change. Is that true, or in the light of this discussion, it doesn't seem to be?
Well, two things. There's different kinds of Shruti. Excuse me, different kinds of Smriti. And we're going to, you know, you're ahead of the game again, that there are Smriti literatures that aren't Vedic, but they're like, you know, they're not part of the four Vedas. They are persons who write such literatures that are considered, you know, commentary on the Shrutis. That's one category. But then there are the original Puranas that are also in the category of Smriti, and they're not changing. And a distinction, Jiva Goswami already pointed out in his Sarvasambhadini commentary, that when Vyasa puts, you know, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, that's an embellishment to make it easier for the reader. But it, you know, the text doesn't yet added Krishna's words. It's unchanging. Okay. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, we've heard that at the end of Kali Yuga, when the start of new Satyuga begins, the great sages who are on higher realms come down to restart Satyuga,
yes.
Such
yes.
as Vyasadeva.
Yes.
And then during this discussion, it was mentioned multiple times that there's a new Vyasadeva for each cycle.
Yes.
So how to reconcile those two statements?
Is it a problem?
My understanding...
He can be present in the next Satya Yuga, but he's not necessarily the one that does the service of dividing and compiling.
Got it. Thank you.
It's a post, and someone else can occupy the post. Yes, you want to grab the microphone? when you're done, can you carry it to the next person too?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So in South Indian Brahmins, it's kind of, they make effort to chant the Veda. It's almost like fashionable in religious circles.
It's almost like what?
Fashionable.
Fashionable?
Yes. Oh, I'm chanting Vedas.
Okay.
But they don't pay much attention to understanding the meaning of it. It's mostly about getting the meter right and the rhythm right.
Well, it's mostly about getting the dakshina that comes after to recite the mantras.
Sorry?
It's mostly about the remuneration, the dakshina that comes from the yajna, not the...
Well, my father does it not for so much the dakshina, but he gets his happiness from the meter and the intonation, etc.
Okay. That's a more elevated brahmana than the ones I've encountered.
Yeah,
but okay, fine.
Could you comment something on it? Like, you know, they make the effort to chant the Vedas or other Vedic mantras.
I have encountered some. They're very enthusiastic. You know, not in a showy way, but just in a sharing, brahminical way, to explain the mantras. A while ago, a group of us went to some temples in South India, and some of them were the show, and some of them were the explain brahmanas. And you know, it's nice. They take the time. They sat with all of us, and we just did these following mantras, and this part meant this, and that part meant that, and they explained the whole thing. It's very nice. So some are like that, and some are not.
So the people who chant the mantras just for the sake of chanting, without trying
to... But it's purifying.
Is it
purifying? Even this chant for the sake of chanting, it's purifying. It's far better than what some other people do that don't chant the mantras. It's purifying. It's elevating. It's good for them and good for those who hear the mantras. It can be more complete and more complete and more, most complete and complete, perfect. But it's good that they're chanting the mantras. And it's good that you're interested in understanding the meaning of them, not just, you know, hearing the mantras. You're not satisfied.
Yes, the flip side is most of them are very confused Shankarites, Mayavadis. So how does that play in? Like they chant mantras, but they're very confused on the philosophic side and it becomes a complex situation. Could you comment something on it?
I did.
Something more, please.
They're getting purified because the sound vibration is purifying. It's similar to the holy name. Some people just like the musicality of kirtan. They don't know what it is. But they're getting purified. Especially depending upon the kirtanir. If the kirtanir is Krishna conscious, then the sound vibration is more elevating than if the kirtanir is not Krishna conscious, but it's just a musician. And they're interested in the musicality, not, you know, the uplifting sound vibration. The consciousness of the kirtanir is what's important. And it's also, to get the full benefit, they must have some bandhagyan. Most of them, these days at least, in the kirtan events, they don't have some bandhagyan. They're not really interested in some bandhagyan. They're, you know, allergic to it. They'll run the other way if someone wants to tell them some bandhagyan. But they're getting benefit. Are you done? You want to say something further? It looks like. But we have other people with their hands up. Up here? Just up front?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. When we hear about Yajur Veda coming in any context, how are we to distinguish between whether it is referring to the original Yajur Veda or the Yajur Veda part of the Vedas?
I didn't understand your question. Try again. Use different language so I can get it, because I don't get it. Some other people are nodding their heads, but I didn't get it.
So Yajur Veda is the name which is used for both the part as well as the whole?
Yes.
So how are we to distinguish between...
Generally it means the part.
Generally it means
unless
the part.
It's stated otherwise, it means the part.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's most commonly as the part, one of the four.
Mm-hmm. Another thought that I was having is that, so the original Vedas, that means...
Original Veda is the word? Original
Vedas? Original Vedas.
Original
which
Veda.
Is original Yadur.
Original Veda.
Original Yajur okay. Veda. Is therefore, we can say, is written in both Laukik and Alaukik
no.
Sanskrit.
Alaukika. Alaukika. Not both. Alaukika. Only one. Alaukika.
But then the fifth Veda is coming as a part of the...
I see your question. Good question. I'd have to ask a scholar because I don't know the answer. It would, very similar to what Krishnasmarna's question was, it would seem that it's Laukika because it doesn't change. Mm-hmm. But then okay. I'm not sure. Radhika Raman will probably know. Gopi Pranadana would definitely know, but he's not around to ask anymore, so. You had a question way back there. Can you come up and get the microphone?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you. Very wonderful retreat going on. I'm not sure if I'm getting everything, but the two points which stuck out earlier in the earlier part of the retreat, I think yesterday or day before yesterday you said that Ramchandraji came from Krishna, so his incarnation, not Krishna himself. And today you said that Vyasadevaji is a post, it's not, but what I read is that he's literary incarnation of Krishna. So how do I understand these two points, Maharaj?
With your intelligence.
What I thought was that Ramchandraji is Krishna himself. He's coming...
He's an expansion of Krishna, and Vyasadeva is an expansion of Krishna. There are different categories, different types of expansions, but they're expansions of Krishna. If you can come again tomorrow, you're going to be here tomorrow? We're going to hear from the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam tomorrow about which particular type of expansion is Vyas. Because it's stated in relation to this, Gotama's curse. When he cursed that the brahmanas would lose their knowledge, we heard it earlier today, we're going to hear it again tomorrow, that the demigods headed by Lord Shiva and Brahma went to Lord Vishnu and said, "Help! The brahmanas have lost their knowledge. Please do something." So, the Supreme Lord, understanding the situation, decided to come himself. Whereas in the other 999 cycles of the four yugas, a living entity is empowered. In this case, Lord Vishnu came himself, or an expansion of him, and there's certain language. Angsa angsa kala. It's not Krishna in his fullness, it's angsa angsa kala. We'll see. That's a particular type. A partial incarnation. You know, whatever that is. It's a partial incarnation. He's Vishnu Tattva. Not Jiva Tattva that's empowered. Commonly, Vyasa is a Shaktivesh avatar. He's empowered with the Jnana Shakti of the Supreme Lord to do that service. Commonly. That's what Parashara is. He was a Vyas. But then our particular, in this cycle of four yugas, our Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas is Vishnu Tattva. And Prashar says it. And the Bhagavatam says it.
Okay. So,
does that help?
So just to clarify that I understood it properly, not in every yuga cycle Vyasadeva is incarnation of Krishna.
There is a Shaktivesh avatar category, an empowered jiva, and And that's it. That's, you know, he acts like Krishna acts. He acts with the fullness of Krishna's potency, but still a jiva. That's a Shaktyavesha avatar. And one can even consider, just like, you know, in the Shaktyavesha avatar category, there's Ananta. He's Vishnu Tattva too. Ananta Shesha is Vishnu Tattva, and he's considered a Shaktyavesha avatar. What do you think about that? So, our Krishna Dvaipaya Vyas is Vishnu Tattva. That's the point. I mean, that, you know, don't get lost in, this is complicated enough. That's what's important. That's, you know, what Jiva Goswami wants us to know. Because, you know, the next time we're going to see our friend, the Purva Paksha guy, he's going to say, you know, I'm sorry, but our school just can't accept that the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic. We accept that they're, you know, like some scholars will say, we accept that they're Smritis, which is nice, but we're not going to call them Vedic. And the response is, well, even if you have that point of view from your school, even with these Brihat Aranyaka and Chandogya Upanishad and all these Vedic, you still want to say it's not Vedic? Here's another one. Okay, your school thinks that. But this Vyas is Krishna. So it's special out of all the Vyasas. So that's their whole undercheat on that one. You know, the speciality of Vyas. Our Vyas. Krishna Dvaipaya Vyas. Which is important for us when we're dealing with, again, the audience of Jiva Goswami is not the Hare Krishna temple devotees. ISKCON sadhakas. It's scholars out there where he wants to give a definitive, comprehensive summary of Lord Chaitanya's Siddhanta. And, you know, put the stakes in the ground and hammer them. This is his Siddhanta and justifiable. And then, you know, the Purva Paksha fellows, the people from other schools, you say this, here's our reply. You say that, and, you know, all around. We're ready to state why we accept what we accept. So, one of them is the unique qualification of Vyas. You know, the final stop of the train, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. There's some stops before that final stop. You know, the Puranas and Itihasas have to be Vedic. And some people say they're not. And so he's addressing it. They're Vedic. They're the fifth Veda. And even if you accept they're just Smriti, I'm sorry. There's Vyas. They're Vedic. Okay? I'm going to take the microphone away from you. There's some other people. Someone over here wants some. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
No, Maharaj.
You're a powerful guy. Stay close by. Take the microphone when we need to. Go ahead.
Stay there. For Sridhar Swami, I was thinking about, you said that he was a worshipper of Lord Narasimhadev. I was thinking that he is from Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya to Vit Sampradaya.
No, he's not.
So Vit Sampradaya.
He's the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya.
Okay.
Sridhar Swami is not from the Sri Sampradaya. He's from the Vishnu Swami. But, you know, Sri Vaishnavas can be worshippers of Nrsingadev too. Mm-hmm. There are great Sri Vaishnavas that are worshippers of Nrsingadev. No problem.
Okay, and another question I had, Yajna Valka, when he got the Yajur Veda from Surya Narayan, is it still the part of four Vedas?
Yes.
And how is it differentiated?
It's just more voluminous than what Vyas provided Vaishampayana. There's more that Surya Narayan gave than what Vyasadeva gave to Vaishampayana. Yajna Valkya wanted more. And he got it. There's more. It's still part of the Vedas, the four Vedas, or the Yajurveda. This wasn't available on the earthly realm before, and he got it.
But all the four Vedas are from one Yajurveda, so where does that fit into?
Yeah, so now let's do the one Yajurveda thing again. Should I read the paragraph again? The commentary of the commentator that came after Baladev, who explained this term Yajurveda is following a Vedic rule that where there's more diamonds in the box, you call it a box of diamonds, even though there may be sapphires, rubies, and emeralds. So what is called, that one Veda that's called the Yajurveda, is because it, the most prominent of the four is the Yajurveda, therefore it's called the Yajurveda. But there was others in the box, in that original one Veda, there's divisions already. Just not separated out, and Vyasa separated them out. Is that clear?
That is very clear. Thank you for that. But where is Yajurveda's Yajurveda fit into that? Is it again in the same box?
Yeah. No, they weren't in the box yet. They were still in the heavenly planets.
Right. And then he got it.
Then he put them in the box.
Oh, okay. And I have one more question.
Sure.
Vedanta Sutra, as we discussed before, that Shankaracharya gave impersonal explanation on Vedanta Sutra.
Sambandha, he sure did.
Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana.
Yeah.
Now, where did Shankaracharya's Vedanta Sutra fit into? Is it in the six darshans?
Let's take a look at it. Whoops. Ah, there's the chart. Here's the six. Of the six, one of them is... I have seen the six listed differently. Scholars do that, you know. But so in this chart, the first one of the six is Vedanta, compiled by Vyas, making an explanation through Vedanta Sutra on all of the Vedas. Next is Jaimini's Mimamsa. Next is Gotama's Nyaya. Next is Kanada's Vaisheshika, or metaphysics. Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, commentary on the Vedas, is number five. And Sankhya by atheistic Kapila. So, he didn't even get one of the six. He's not even on the chart. But he wrote a commentary.
Right.
But these are very ancient personalities. And Shankaracharya is a more modern personality.
Right. So what I was trying to get to is... Srimad Bhagavatam is an exposition on Vedanta Sutra. So where does Vedanta Sutra fit into the chart?
Okay. Where is that in the chart? It's one of the, at least in this chart, it's Vyasa summarizing all the Vedas in the form of Vedanta Sutra. Shankaracharya wrote a commentary.
Okay.
Baladev wrote a commentary. Ramanuja wrote a commentary. Madhvacharya wrote a commentary. But those commentaries on that one box, the Vedanta box, that's one of the six darshans. So they're not standalone darshans, they're just commentaries on one of those. A school of thought on Vedanta Sutra. Or a school of thought on the Vedas commenting on Vedanta Sutra, which is a summarization of all the Vedas. The Vedas like, phew, and Vedanta Sutra's. So commentary on all of the Vedas by commenting on Vedanta Sutra.
But then why that will be in the atheistic sixth darshan?
Well, one of them isn't atheistic. That's Kapila, the Lord, Vyasadeva's, of this particular rendering, Vyasadeva's was not.
But then...
Are you confused?
Now I am. So that Vedanta in sixth darshan is...
Please don't confuse me. Go ahead. Keep going.
My only question now is that Vedanta box in sixth darshan, that atheistic one, who wrote that? Let's put it that
way. There's five. There are five that are atheistic, and you're like, one of the last number six was Sankhya. Now, Lord Kapila in the Bhagavatam teaches Sankhya, but there's this other fellow, imitation Kapila, you know, atheistic Kapila, that wrote Sankhya that's atheistic. Now, I think I'm going to do some homework, just like I did with this, you know, how did Balaram go on pilgrimage thing. I'll do some homework, and I'm not clear. I'm not, you know, I don't know why there's six darshans, and that Vyasa is one of the six darshans. I think there's another list that says something else, but I'm going to do a little research. Hold your question till tomorrow. How's that?
Sure.
But we're not going to include Shankaracharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, or in the Vaishnava commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, as one of the darshans. Sorry. It's not where they fit into that chart. It's commentaries on those things. Just think, you know, the whole chart. There's commentaries on the Upanishads. But it's not, the commentary on the Upanishad is not one of the, it's a commentary on the Upanishads. Commentary on Vedanta Sutra is not at sixth darshan.
So what I really wanted to know is Srimad Bhagavatam is an exposition on Vedanta Sutra, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the part of the Purana.
Yes.
So, and then I was looking at the Vedanta Sutra. Where is that? And then how Srimad Bhagavatam will come into the category of Purana from Vedanta Sutra?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you're clear what you're asking, because I'm not. If you look at the Bhagavatam composition, you know, that chapter 4 of Canto 1 is a question. Begins with the question, how did the Bhagavatam manifest? Not all the Vedas, but how did the Bhagavatam manifest? So, when Vyas wrote, or, you know, did his work, you know, here's the four Vedas, and here's the Itihasas and Puranas. You heard Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj's lectures on this. Yes? Did you listen to Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj's lectures on Tattva Sandarbha?
Only one. The
only
first
once,
one.
But you listened.
Only one, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I listened eight times. Mm-hmm. He explains that there's two. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Uvacha. I haven't done the personal research, but he's very careful. And in his very careful research, Vyas wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, and then after his mature realization, it's the second edition. Now he says that in his lectures. I haven't asked him about it. Commonly what we hear is the essence of the Bhagavatam was in those four verses. And then those four verses expanded into 18,000 verses based upon his mature realization. He just manifested instead of 18,000. To expand on those four.
Yeah.
And so the Bhagavatam was already present, and the version that we have, the 18,000 versions that you can, you know, get from the BBT with purports, that's the mature fruit of Vyasadeva's realization, which includes many things. We're going to hear about them. Just stay tuned for the later parts of Tattva Sandarbha. It's a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It explains the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. We're going to hear some of the details. And then there's more in Paramatma Sandarbha on the details, which we'll hear during our seminar, if I get there. It's already 9:45. So, I'm going to do a little homework on this. And if you have some questions, we'll try to take them up tomorrow. Tomorrow. Please come back tomorrow. It's 9:45.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.